You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Thanks to Steph Stradley for hanging with us here. Offensive lines. Lance is... by the way, he's an expert in offensive line. Dad was an offensive line coach. He's on the Joe Moore Awards. He looks at offensive line play in college football. He knows. He's been studying these guys as they
come
up. My
dad worked with Max Sharping briefly before COVID. He worked with him for a couple weeks out of Danny
Arnold. I wasn't talking about your dad. I was talking about you. But
well, that's how I get some.
Yeah, well, okay. That's where you get a lot of your information, I know. But he studies these guys at college for the Joe Moore. Nobody looks at an offensive line play. It's got to be kind of boring at times, I would imagine.
No, you know, I don't look at it that way. I really don't. I mean, no jokes here. I think offensive line, that's hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most physical aspect. That's like, you know, boxing's boring. No, not really. Not if guys are throwing punches. And there's punches being thrown every single snap.
Yeah. Well, there's big knock. Well, I guess there's big.
There's technique. But it's a unit, too. Like, you can be one. This is always my problem with what the Texans gave up for one player on the offensive line and Laremy Tunsil. You don't fix pass protection with one player. Pass protection is a five-man unit that often a six-man is added, either tight end or running back that have to be added, or even quarterback who's responsible if you bring more than you can block. And so, even though you have individual battles that have to be won, I also like the team element, because if four guys block well and one guy doesn't, the whole thing could turn into a gain of zero.
Yeah.
Like, you could have, so
right.
It is important, and I think it is important.
It's important to have good players,
well,
and he's a good player, but you're right.
Who's he? Laremy. Yeah.
You know, Jalen Ramsey on the outside, he's got his job. He's not dependent nearly as much on... Yeah, sometimes, you know, when zone defenses or whatnot. But he's got to lock down his guy. And so, you know, maybe that is worth more. Jamal Adams, I'm not so sure. Two first-rounders. Khalil Mack was a couple of first-rounders.
A rusher can have a huge impact on the game, because if you have to put too much attention on him, it opens other things up. One offensive tackle can't fix everything. As a matter of fact, you can take your best rusher and move him to the other side, and then what?
Yeah.
I mean, then what with your left tackle you gave up?
Well, then you use a first rounder on another.
Tackle. And you pay him $20 million to give.
So you've used three first rounders.
So yeah, I watch a lot of offensive line play. I have for a long time.
All right, so who do you think? Okay, just off the top of your head,
I don't know the answer.
You don't know the answer to these. The best offensive lines in the NFL.
I'd say now that they're healthy once again, I'd say the Dallas Cowboys should be up there.
They're fifth.
Zach Martin. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
They're getting a little long in the tooth with Zach and Teron.
Man, well, Zach was only drafted in 2014. Wasn't that long ago, 7 years.
Yeah.
Teron has been Armstead, I think. Teron Smith, I'm thinking of the Saints. Yeah, Teron Smith is getting older.
Yeah, Connor Williams is
older.
That's a good line. So they're fifth. Who else do you think?
I would say it's no longer, it hadn't been the Steelers for a little while. I would say Ravens just lost. Used to be Green Bay, but not, they can't have Green Bay in there anymore. Now with Bakhtiari out. And see, it shouldn't be Minnesota, even though you get rushing yards for it. Minnesota's not in there, right?
No.
Because they're not, I don't think they're that good. Hold on, let me think just for a second. Well, you know what? Did they have Tampa in there right now?
Yeah, Tampa's two. The Tampa
wow,
two.
That feels a little high, but Tampa, because the rookie Tristan Wirfs played so well last year, that's what made me think, you know what? They're pretty good guard to guard. Now they're pretty good at right
Number tackle. One is maybe a little bit surprising, but you know, when you think about it, what they've done and how much they've added to it, it's Cleveland.
Yeah.
Conklin.
Yeah. You know what? That's funny how quick that can change because they added Conklin as a free agent. Jedrick Wills was good as a rookie, and I thought he was the best in the draft class at offensive
Betonio,
line.
Treader.
Yeah, and those guys have been there for a while. Treader was a cast off from Green Bay. Betonio has been a long time good player over there. So they're one. You got two is Tampa. You got five is Green Bay. Let me see if I can pull these other ones. Colts are in there probably.
Colts are up there at seven.
Okay, Colts are at seven. It's not Jacksonville.
But they got Eric Fisher in there, so hopefully
it's not Jacksonville. It's not Tennessee. Tennessee wouldn't be in there either, I don't think. Do they have Ravens in there?
The Ravens are 10th. Here's
wow, 10th.
What the Chiefs did this offseason?
The Chiefs in top five?
Nine. They're nine.
Oh,
but you know what? Look at what they added. Orlando Brown, Joe Thuney. They get the doctor back, Duvernay.
Yeah,
Frenchie. Tardif, Creed Humphrey, and Lucas Niang. That was their weakest point last year in the Super Bowl, and they made it a strength.
I'm trying to think a good offensive line. Well, the Saints actually are pretty decent.
Saints are up there. The Saints are
top five.
Yeah, the Saints are the Saints are three.
Yeah, because Eric McCoy and Teron Armstead, they're pretty good.
They got the Patriots at four.
Okay. But you know what that tells me is so Ravens, when they had Marshall Yanda, were up there. You had Green Bay at one point was up there. Actually, the offensive lines have come down a little bit in terms of who the top offensive lines are, and it's kind of up for grabs right now. That's how you see Cleveland jump into that. Now, that's somebody's subjective opinion, I should say. But it still tells you that offensive line play is there to be had right now relative to, okay, well, here's the best teams. Because I'm going through my mind, it just there's a lot of holes for a lot of teams where you used to see a lot of them were more steady. The Texans, my guess, I have not seen where they're ranked in this one. My guess is, based on how they're ranking these offensive lines, I'm going to say 14th.
27th. And I think that's just a product of being the Houston Texans. I think that they're probably going to. You know, but now there is the fact that
they couldn't run the football last year. I mean, honestly, if you just I'm actually working off potential. That's probably close. I would say maybe closer to 20. 27 seems a little.
Yeah,
far
no,
down.
I think anything Texans is just they suck.
But Max Sharpie's
and
got
when
a lot
you, when
to
you're
prove,
talking about subjective,
Titus Howard can't stay healthy. Max Sharpie has a lot to prove. I'm not sure that this Justin McCray thing is going to work out great. Britt, we'll see. He didn't play football last year. He's your starting center right now. And then you have Laremy Tunsil. It's not like you have a lot of. We went into last year going, oh, man, Sharping and Howard and Tunsil. And Nick Martin's, you know, just kind of average. But you got yourself a chance to. We legitimately
average?
Thought you had a chance to
average?
Be.
Average? The guy that you gave $27 million to is average?
Well, even last year we were saying that. Okay. Like, I don't think we had any.
All right.
But
says you, Bill O'Brien thought he was awesome.
This year, Bill O'Brien's decision making was the worst we've ever seen for an NFL team.
Okay.
For a guy making
says
personnel
you.
Moves.
Says you. Jacksonville, they got 24th.
Jacksonville's got a chance to be a lot better than that. But if you look at what the Texans, if you look at the Texans right now compared to where we were last year, is Titus Howard a tackle or a guard? Don't know. Had COVID. Or he's in COVID protocol or whatever. We don't know. How he's going to play now? He's
well.
Both
I
positions.
Think Marcus Cannon is probably an X factor in all of this. Well, he's been.
Well,
yeah.
So that's my point. Where's Marcus Cannon? Where's the 33-year-old Marcus Cannon? Where is Titus Howard? He's just coming back from COVID-related stuff. Justin McCray is the starting guard. You know, we'll see. You've got Tunsil is going to be fine. Justin Britt, we got to see how he plays. He didn't play football last year. We got to see how he plays this year. And Max Sharpen has a lot of questions right now. There's definitely more questions than answers with an offensive line that you and I thought were a top eight offensive line last year.
Yeah, well,
and I felt pretty confident about it.
And you know, it's funny. We just had Steph Stradley on. She wrote an article last year about how they were moving guys around and trying to see where they fit, and they wanted a lot of guys with versatility, as opposed to a guy learning his trade at one position and, you know, getting really, really good at that. No, let's move him in. Let's move him. They're moving Tunsil around or they're moving Titus Howard around right now. And you're like, can't you find a spot for him and let him really practice and let him get good at that spot as opposed to, well, we're not sure. So we're going to move him. We're going to, you know what? He can play multiple positions. We love versatility. Yeah, I guess if you want to be, you know, jack of all trades and really master of none. Or you can, you know, get really good at your trade. And so that's another thing that they're doing now with, and whether or not that's going to retard Howard's growth is a legitimate question. Moving him around as opposed to, hey, let's get a really good tackle here and let's let him get comfortable and see as many, you know, game situations as possible in practice. But no, let's keep moving him around and see what's going to happen when Marcus Cannon gets there, whenever. Whenever Marcus,
I think they still don't know what they have with Titus Howard though. Right now, that's the problem is They can't figure out if he is a tackle. And I think there are times he looked, to me, he looks too heavy, where he looked a little slow getting off the line. He didn't test well, by the way. He tested really poorly. That was surprising because I thought he looked very fluid and smooth on tape. When I watched him, there's a game early in his season against Auburn where I'm like, holy crap, this kid Titus Howard can play. And then you see his testing and his lateral movement testing is really poor. And a lot of times that is not a good indicator. Like, that's a bad indicator. It's a somewhat accurate indicator for certain offensive line movements. So I think, you know, he's gained a bunch of weight since he was a senior at Alabama State, but he had room to grow. My question is, did he get too big? Has he sacrificed some quickness that he's going to need? And my other problem is, when he plays a guard, I don't think he's strong enough as a run blocker. I told this to my dad. You know, my dad worked with Max Sharping, so he kind of knows some of this. Max Sharping's not going to be a good run blocking guard. Never going to be a good run blocking guard. That's not what he's made for. He can pass pro, though. What my dad told me is, he said, you know, Lance, he is a tackle. He said he's got a tackle body, but he played at Northern Illinois for a reason. He was not a big Power 5 guy. He was at Northern Illinois for a reason. He's got a tackle body, but you're going to ask him to play guard. He's not real strong in his lower body. He's not going to be able to drive block. I mean, if anything, he's going to have to be in a zone scheme where you're just working to positioning and things like that, getting guys cut off. Because when you're asking him to just move bodies around, Max Sharp is not going to do that. But he can be, I think, a pretty good pass protector. Last year, he lost his confidence in pass protection when he played against strong guys. And that's the thing. Moving a tackle to a guard, your concern is, does he have the strength to go up against guys who are going to be 30 and 40 pounds and 50 pounds heavier than what he's used to, and guys who are more physical? And can he get his hands up there on guys quick enough? And I think that's what we're seeing with Max Sharpen, is he's still learning to – I don't know if he's fully capable of doing what the Texans want him to as a guard. I think that's the problem. With Titus Howard, I'm not sure they know – they believe that he's fully capable of being – a plus tackle. And they better find out, because before you know it, the fifth-year option is going to be upon them, and they're going to have to make a decision.
Yeah,
is that going to be a wasted first-round pick?
They
want to give him a bunch of money, too, on a second contract?
Of course you do.
Let me tell you what happened to – now, they weren't first-rounders, but Connor – and these guys were good Texans. You had Brooks Reed and Connor Barwin. You remember – and I'm not saying Rick Smith made the wrong call here necessarily. It's frustrating to see guys who are second-rounders go – but the Texans had to make decisions on second contracts, and they just decided, you know what? Wade Phillips' scheme is responsible for pass rush, not Barwin, the individual rusher, or Brooks Reed, the individual rusher. So they let them walk. The Texans are now going to have to figure out, man, do we want to give Titus Howard, you know, starting second contract money at tackle? And so they got to find out if he can even play tackle. And then at some point, they're going to have to figure out, is this guy worth us giving a second contract? Been hurt 2 years in a row. He's had injuries. He's been out. And when he's played, he's been, you know, a little up and down.
All right, when we come back, we're still ahead. Robert Flores is going to join us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from MLB Network. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Donald Trump of baseball. The Donald Trump of baseball next, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. In the meantime, what about SiteJab?
SiteJab, company who takes your website, can be the most average website in the world out there. I've seen some really bad ones, especially some of you restaurants really have to step it up. Because I always go to restaurants to see, oh, what's the website look like? What's the menu look like? Do they have, you know, and the restaurants are so, their websites are so plain. A lot of them are super, super outdated. They put no time into it, no resources. You know, SiteJab is out there trying to help your small to medium-sized business earn more money. And the way that they do that is taking everything that you do and putting it on the website for people to see and interact with. They want people to get a feel for your business. They want to, you know, put you in the best light. That's why they help you with video production and integrating video into your website. They can help you with branding and identity. That's a big part of it. Obviously, the web design is first and foremost, making sure that you have a site that flows well and that keeps people interested in the eyes on the page. But also, they can handle social media management and adding e-commerce to your site. They're an entire suite of products to help you turn your website into a big-time money producer. Go to SiteJab.com, building websites and creating leads since 1998. SiteJab, SiteJab.com.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. So Mets owner, he's the richest owner, right? He's worth like $40 billion, whatever he is.
Yeah,
Steve
something
Cohen.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's really stupid how much. This guy's got so much money, and he's going to buy. He's going to end up, I have a feeling this is going to be like the Dodgers. But
you know where he made his money?
Junk bonds.
Nope. He invented Taco Bell.
He invented Taco Bell? Mm-hmm. Are you making that up?
Yep.
As of this morning, when the markets opened, he is worth $16
billion. $16 billion. So he's
the 119th richest person.
We'll see what happens to the market. Yeah. You never like when your owner just sits there. You never hear from him ever, and all of a sudden he just shoots at you through Twitter.
It's hard to. Here's what Steve Cohen said. Well, this was after their fifth straight loss.
Yeah. And the Astros are on how many straight?
Four. So this is my question
Jim
to you.
Crane's getting
so
his
this
Twitter
is my question
ready.
To you.
Because we don't hear from Crane a lot lately.
No. Steve Cohen said this. I tweeted this. It's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. The best teams have a more disciplined approach. The slugging and OPS numbers don't lie. He had 17,000 responses. He had 17,000 likes, 4,600 responses to it. Their manager, Luis Rojas, said, hey, you know what? It is what it is. We got to play better. That's all. That's all we got to do. And you know what? He wasn't so wrong. Now, you know, Pete Alonso's hurt, and you know, the Astros, they don't have Tucker.
Don't tell me about injuries. I don't care about your injuries.
They didn't have Alvarez for a little while. They haven't had Bregman forever. But they do have Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers, who are, you know, some of the best hitters in baseball. Mm-hmm. But when is, and Steve Cohen is just a rich guy. I don't know that that is going to endear him to other major league players where I got to get to New York to play for the Mets for this guy. You know, the one that's just blasting his hitters. I'm not sure. Most good owners really stay, you know, but there was Steinbrenner, and he was obviously out in the open about everything.
Can you imagine Steinbrenner in the age of Twitter?
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
he would have had an account.
He would have had four.
Oh, yeah.
And he
would
have argued with himself to make everybody think burners. That one of his burners was not his burner.
No. He would be very Trumpish. He would be very Trumpish.
Yeah, on there all the time, taking shots. Somebody's going to have to be like, you can't. Listen.
Oh, really?
It's George best that you handle this with behind closed doors with Billy Martin and the team.
Really?
Billy Martin, biggest loser, you know, like lowest rated manager. Can you imagine? I mean, how much he would have fought with. How do you have a manager for that long who is like who you hate, love? I don't know what that is.
So the Astros have lost four straight. So when does Jim Crane come out?
Then start texting.
I mean, and tweeting. Start. How about
Jim Crane? Doesn't have a Twitter account, does he?
I doubt it. He's too busy. He's too busy making money. Let me see. He's too rich to have a Twitter.
There's a not Jim Crane.
There's a not Jim Crane. Okay.
And there's a Jim Crane with 61 followers. That's not him. It says Go Bears. Diehard Cub fan. It says it's just no chance. It's him. I don't think.
No, I doubt that.
Not Jim Crane. Let's see if it's a fake Jim Crane account. It is.
And
27 followers.
Is he blasted? Last time
he tweeted was 2012.
Oh, my gosh. 2012, Jim Crane didn't even own the Astros then.
Yeah.
Did he just buy them?
Yeah. Well, that's when people started getting mad because you couldn't see the Astros. They were mad then because he wouldn't spend money on middling relievers so that his team might win 83. One games or 75 games.
I don't know if you heard, but he gave $30 million to a guy named Feldman. Remember the Cubs pitcher?
I remember
pitcher?
Scott Feldman.
Yes.
Soft toss.
Well, I mean, I know. And that was the first big contract they gave out. I'm like, really? Scott Feldman is the big...
No, he... basically Jim Crane said, well, what are we throwing money away for?
Right.
We
for
can't
who?
Be
for
competitive.
What?
What are we doing? What are we? And
we're going to bring up this little fella.
Fans were really mad at him for a little while. And then you back that up with they couldn't see games on TV
because
of Comcast Sportsnet. And everyone blamed everything on Jim Crane. It is funny that things have really turned around. And kind of like, remember when there was a lot of hate for Les Alexander when he came in and got rid of Calvin Murphy and started making these changes and that changes. And they brought Murph back. They won a title his first year there, and everything was good with Les after that. Everything's good with Crane. I never hear anyone mad at Jim Crane now. But he doesn't have a Twitter account.
I'm getting mad at him.
Do you
that
think
he's not going to tweet anything about Dusty Baker's decisions.
You want him to tweet about Dusty Baker?
Yes.
You want him to be what you said George Steinbrenner would have been.
Yes.
I don't want Jerry Jones of baseball.
I do. I want him to come out and just blast Dusty for dumb decisions like
Jones
taking Greinke out.
All the time?
Huh?
Just because he has press conferences? He does his own radio shows, but how is Jerry Jones not tweeting all the time?
I know, right?
That's another guy that you would think, man. You would think that guy would be sending tweets all the time.
All the time. I would love to see that. Please do that.
I don't want Jim Crane.
I like the way he's going about it. Cohen's going about it. I really do think that he should Jim Crane really needs to adopt that and start blasting Carlos when he's 0-for-60. By the way,
I don't sign up for this at all. Yeah. I don't co-sign any of this. You want
By the way, Pete Alonso is healthy. He's not. He's hurting, but he's playing.
He's hurting.
He's hurting the team, but he's playing.
Isn't it amazing? The Astros just lost. They got swept to a team whose best hitters are in the 270s. That's three got 1, 2, and 3 are hitting in the 270s. Now, Prez is having a good year. He's having a good year. When you look up and down that roster, that's like a ton of Adam Everetts.
But that,
like, oh my God, how is this happening?
But listen, they're getting destroyed by this little Nicky dude. I mean, it's ridiculous. Nicky Lopez is destroying this team.
Speedy Nicky Lopez.
Oh my God! How is it that he's getting 3 hits a game? He's stealing bases on every. He stole third yesterday. Castro doesn't even look at him. It's unbelievable. And then, oh by the way, yeah, in a game situation, guess what Santana did? Grounded into a double play. The game before, we can't pitch to Santana in a game situation because he's a much better hitter than, say, have you seen him in clutch situations? Oh, that's right. Salvador Perez is much better.
I got news for you. All of your problems and all your concerns are about to go away because Papa says Alex Bregman's about to come back.
And he should play here, pretty soon. So he's feeling better and running better. Mm-hmm. When he's going to play exactly, I don't know.
Yeah, we don't either.
But he's going to play, though.
He's dead to me now.
When he said play, he means for the Skeeters. You know that, right?
Yeah, right.
He doesn't mean for the big team. All he's 2-27 with the Skeeters, so we still have some work to do.
You
even
think?
With
you
Skeeter
think
ball.
We still got some work to do
Skeeter
on the 2-for-27 AAA hitter?
Skeeter ball still has some work to do.
Okay.
Yes.
Robert Flores is going to join us on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5. Yeah. And, his brother's still here coaching basketball.
U of H Cougar.
Roflo, he's a big
MLB.
He's a big, big, big Houston guy, and he's a big success on MLB Network. So we will talk to Robert Flores on the other side about our Houston Astros and more. But right now we are talking about GimmeTheVin.com. That's GiveMeTheVin.com. That's John Clay Wolf. And if you're looking for the best way to get rid of that car, now is the time. I'm not even joking. So the new car industry has been really struggling, manufacturing cars, the lack of chips, the lack of employees, COVID, everything that has shut down the car industry. And so it made the used car industry so vital and such a huge market. John Clay Wolf says he's never seen anything like this. And so here he is now saying it's ending. So I would hurry if I were you. I would sell my car in a hurry. If you're thinking about this, if your payments are too high, or that vehicle's getting older, or it's just not what you wanted, or whatever the case may be, you want to sell that vehicle, Now's the time to do it. And actually, it's the month to do it because next month the car industry is going to start to change again. So you want the most for that vehicle. Now's the time. At GiveMeTheVIN.com. That's GiveMeTheVIN.com.
ESPN.
97.5.
The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, local boy makes it big, Robert Flores, MLB Network, MLB Central Live. This is how good this guy is. He's on the air in a half hour with his national television show, and he's joining us right now when he should be preparing. If you, Robert, welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here, but are we going to get blamed if things go poorly on the show today?
Oh, no. I think things go poorly pretty much every day from my perspective. It'll be pretty much just run of the mill.
We can't be blamed. We can't be blamed. Well, thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
You got it.
Happy
to be with you.
He's a great follow on Twitter, and you're always tweeting about Houston stuff, about University of Houston and Astros and all kinds of stuff. And we're confounded, and I would imagine, I don't know how much you guys have talked about it, but it's got to be a national thing, how good the Astros are against good teams, the best in the league against about over 500 teams, and yet how pitiful they are against some 500 teams. What do we make of this?
I don't know what to make of it. Look, they've lost now three in a row this season to teams like the Orioles, the Royals, the Rockies, the Tigers. Now, the Tigers under A.J. Hinch have been playing very, very well, especially since, after a rough May. But I don't know what to make of it. And one of the things I like to do is whenever the Astros Twitter handle posts the final score after a loss, especially one to a team like the Royals, I like to read the comments and see what people are saying. And rightfully so, people are upset and they're heated. But one thing that I see often is, well, Dusty doesn't have these guys ready to play. I want to caution people that baseball is an everyday sport. So this notion of not being ready to play, that's football talk, right? That's like practices and preparation leading up to one big game. Baseball, they play every day, right? These guys, for the most part, 99.9% of the time, they're ready to play. But that's just baseball. Yeah, I mean, the Orioles are a terrible team, but they've beaten the Astros three times in a row. Sometimes it happens, but to happen this often to these kind of teams, I don't know what to make of it, frankly.
It's unbelievable. Now, Dusty's decision-making, last night, Greinke, 85 pitches, and he pulls him for Blake Taylor, two hitters in, they lost the lead. And here's the thing, Greinke has said it before. He said, I don't know, ever since I got here, people don't trust me for whatever reason. AJ pulled him in the World Series before he should have. He said, this happens to me all the time here for whatever reason.
Yeah, that was one where I thought last night in particular was a little bit strange. Now, you can make the argument, and I think it was Dusty's argument, I think, if I'm reading this correctly. I didn't hear his post-game comments, but I read them. He was talking about Andrew Benintendi. But Andrew Benintendi's numbers against lefties and righties are pretty much the same, right? So I don't know why you, considering in this world of the three-batter minimum, why you want to take the chance of using Taylor against Benintendi, who does equally the same against lefty and righty, and then have that righty face Taylor right after Benintendi, and Taylor just can't get right-handed batters out.
Yeah.
At least not at this point.
Here's so Dusty's.
That for me was a strange one.
Here's Dusty's comments about, and you listen to it, it wasn't whether or not Greinke stays in. This was whether or not he's going to use Graveman or he's going to use Taylor. So he already decided. Here's Dusty last night.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, Taylor was rested too. And Benintendi had some success against Graveman, and Benintendi doesn't hit left-handers nearly as well as right-handers, not even close. And so the situation where You know, Taylor was already loose, you know, for that job. And, you know, everybody has a job to do. I mean, you know, when else was I supposed to use him, you know? And we were going to use Taylor in the seventh. And then we got down to the other Taylor. We were going to bring in Graveman, you know, to pitch the eighth, and then hopefully bring in Presley to pitch the ninth. That's why we didn't bring him in. I mean, you know, he made a mistake. I mean, he had one ball and two strikes, and he hung it. And then he hung the pitch to Dozier as well. That resulted in the 2-run homer.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, hindsight is always 20/20, right? And second guessing, that's something fans and media, that's what we do instantly, right? And Dusty, for the most, and to be fair to Dusty, he's made some decisions that have worked out. I remember in the playoffs when he left Greinke in there, mm-hmm. And it worked out. It just did not work out last night. And in Dusty's defense, the reason they've lost these three games, it's not just Dusty's decision making. It's been a lack of timely hitting. It's been some really bad base running, and it's been some bad pitches at inopportune times. So it's a combination of factors of why the Astros right now are currently struggling. It's not just Dusty's decision making.
No, and the bats are not showing up. I mean, right now, and you do have some injuries, but you're still going to have to get more out of Yuli. Yuli's going to have to get comfortable. He's just not been the same hitter since he came back. You had a clutch hit from Altuve when you needed one, and you had the opportunity there at the plate, which was an unbelievable bang-bang play where a fingers just come up during a slide, and it ends up costing you a tied game. But it was, you know, when you look at what the Astros, right now we're caught up in a situation where if you look around far enough, it's not as far as it used to be. You could see the Astros missing the playoffs. Now, that would take a continued slide. But right now, you know, they're not getting the runs, Robert. They're not getting the runs, and they're starting pitching. You don't have a true number one unless Fromber can fit into that slot or Lance McCullers. I just don't see Zach Greinke as a true shutdown number one guy, not when he's not getting the strikeout numbers and, you know, the things that are typical indicators.
No, I think that's fair. Look, let's take a broader picture, right? If you were to rank the American League contenders, I would go at right now, White Sox, Yankees, Astros, and, excuse me, White Sox, Rays, Yankees, Astros, right now. I don't think as it stands now, and things change, teams get hot. Guys get hot at the right time. I don't see this Astro team advancing far in the playoffs. I think they get in, but as it stands now, I don't see them advancing far. That's subject to change. As I said, guys will get hot. It happens. Our own Mark DeRosa was talked about yesterday. He said, hey, I've been on teams where we just barely eke into the playoffs, and I think, well, this is going to be a short run, and we've ended up winning the World Series. So things happen, but you're right. There are concerns. Framber Valdez, until his last start, was walking way too many guys. Lance McCullers has been really good. Zach Greinke, you're right. He doesn't strike out enough guys. Luis Garcia, you could make the case Luis Garcia has been their most consistent starter all season.
Yep.
You know? How is he going to react in a big-time situation? Jake Odorizzi, uneven at best. Mm-hmm. So there are some real issues here. For this team. That's why currently constructed and currently the way they're playing, I don't see them getting out of the first round. I see them making the playoffs, but I don't see them making a deep run.
Well, that's a terrible thing to say. That's
right before you go on the air, you hit us with this.
Thanks for that. Ugh. Thanks for leaving us with that positivity.
I mean, but you do have the bullpen. Yeah, they've thrown a bunch of arms at it, but we saw it just yesterday. We've actually seen in this playoffs, in this series against the Royals, it's not locked in right now. Your starting rotation, you just pointed out some of the question marks. It's not a problem, but it's also not an easy, you know, oh, well, this is no problem like it's been in the past. And then you get to the lineup, and Alex Bregman is still not back after 2 months of being injured. Yeah. Yuli's not at his best. Like, there are, and Carlos Correa is not the same player he was early in the season as a hitter. There are concerns for sure.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with pointing out concerns, just knowing that baseball is the way it is. Baseball is streaky. Teams, for the most, can be very streaky. Guys can get hot. Guys can go cold. Maybe for the Astros right now, the lucky thing is this is their cold period, and maybe they're going to get scorching hot. We've seen them do that. Look at the back of the baseball cards of the guys in this lineup. They are capable of going on a torrid tear. So I'm not ready to say that it's an absolute the Astros are not going to the World Series or not going to the American League Championship Series. I'm just saying right now there are, I would say, around two or three teams that I think have a better chance of making a deeper run.
Yeah.
Subject to change.
By the way, from August 8th through August 12th, 2017, the Astros lost five games. And they lost at Chicago, a bad baseball team. And they went on to win the World Series. So
August wasn't great.
August was not. No, it was they were very disappointed at the trade deadline, you remember? Yeah. And then they got Verlander at the second trade deadline.
No, but that's right. but this is always baseball.
This is baseball.
In 2 weeks, we could have a completely different conversation.
Right.
8 days ago, the Astros were number one in everyone's power rankings. This is how quick it can switch.
We know you got to go because you got another show, I guess, to get ready for.
His show that he gets paid for.
Oh, yeah, the one on national television. Yeah. That's right. Before you go, who will be on the field first? We've asked this question before. Trevor Bauer or Deshaun Watson?
Ooh.
That's a hard one.
I'm going to punt on probably that question.
I knew he was going to quit.
You're not. Wait a minute. You scared?
Yeah, I don't really know what to say there.
Yeah, it's you know what? We don't mind a punt. We don't mind a punt.
No.
Yeah, I'm gonna do what the Texans are gonna be doing a lot this year.
Punting?
Punting on that question. All right. Well, that's all right. It's good to punt sometimes as opposed to throwing a pick, right?
Hey, you're 100% right. I do not need an unforced error.
Live to see another day. Just get that's it into the fourth quarter, Roflo. Get it into the fourth quarter.
Robert Flores, man, we appreciate it. Thanks for hanging. Congratulations on your success, and have a good show today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Robert Flores right here. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I didn't know that would make him uncomfortable.
Well,
we should end every single interview asking the guest that.
Super uncomfortable question.
Just to
question.
See what everybody says.
Well, you're we'll asking him to make a prediction on Bauer, which in his world is a really big deal, I'm sure.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, for us, it's just a topic. We move on to the next thing. For him, all he does is baseball.
Right, but he's a big Texans fan, too. He's a Houston fan. He's a Houston fan.
No. That's why the question.
The question was, so who's going to be on the field first? The guy that violently assaults women, allegedly, or the guy who is the alleged predator, serial, sexual assaulter?
Why would he not answer that question when you put it like that?
I don't know.
When you put it like that, I'm like, huh, now I know why he punted.
That's a good punt right there.
We also don't know what his actual show, like the people who run his TV show, have told them off air of like, hey, we're not going to touch this yet. We're just going to wait.
Well, no. Trevor Bauer, they've got to talk about Trevor Bauer.
Well, they can talk about it.
They can talk about it, but you've probably been told, hey, don't make predictions. Don't do any of that crazy.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they've told him behind the scenes. All I know is he said, no, I ain't talking about that. It's 845 ESPN, 97.5. Time to talk about Champion Energy. That's what we're talking about. Champion Energy is the best way for you to get your electricity at a better price. I've seen all these commercials. And listen, Alex Bregman promotes. We know Alex Bregman is coming back. We just heard it. He's going to be back soon. And you know what? Champion is his. And so that is the electricity company that he uses. It's the one that you should use. The guy that's playing at Sugarland. That guy. He loves Champion Energy. You should love Champion Energy, too. Go to champion.energy/1560. Sign up today and save money and get the best in service. Champion.energy/1560.
This is Jose Altuve, and you're listening to Jung and Lance on ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by Golf Course Chevrolet, Witt, and GMC.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and
92.5. It's the
849
ESPN
97.5.
Well, yeah, because I'm looking. There's this story came out yesterday that Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn are planning to crash real weddings to inspire Wedding Crashers 2. Mm-hmm. If you had a wedding, would you want Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson to crash it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of Swingers when Vince did that. I've always liked Owen Wilson from his Wes Anderson stuff. Yeah. Owen seems like a good, like a, they both seem like kind of fun guys, I think. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, no, it'd be fun.
I wouldn't mind.
Would you want to play dodgeball with Vince Vaughn?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, you can find those balls. They've got different types of balls that don't hurt as much for dodgeball now, of course. But I feel like I've seen my kids play dodgeball in the backyard. Made me happy. Very happy that they played dodgeball.
It was one of my greatest sports moments ever.
Dodgeball?
Yeah.
Why? What do you mean?
Was I was a sophomore in high school, and it after lunch, we had a dodgeball game before we went back to classes.
Yeah.
And everybody from the lunch crowd would go up and sit in the bleachers, and we would have a dodgeball game. And I was the last guy against five, and I beat him.
You came back from one from five. It's almost unheard of. It's literally almost unheard of. So we called it dodgeball or also bombardment, which is an interesting name, bombardment. You don't ever hear that word ever again, but it's a pretty good name. It's a pretty descriptive name. But in our dodgeball, and you always knew the guys who could really, so you had the rules that if they caught it, you're out. Okay, so all that stuff. What about if you blocked it and the ball is knocked out of your hands?
You're out.
Okay, so all the rules are universal.
Yeah.
I didn't know if y'all had some kind of crazy Chicago rule since y'all didn't have pumps. Anyway, I think that you always knew who the guys were that had the rocket arms,
guys.
Too.
No, we didn't pump guys when I grew up.
Okay. You always knew who had the rocket arms. So you had to be careful there. Like Kirby Sherrod could really throw. He was a lefty too, so he came out of the other hand. But you always knew the kids who really could hum it, and the ones you could bait into throwing, and you could
catch it. And you go,
Or you had, when you had two guys working together on the same team, like okay, you're gonna throw it up there, and then I'm just gonna when he's trying to catch it, I'm gonna peg him as hard.
Well,
as
Well, and
can.
You got a ball in your hand, and the guy throws. You know, he just got a weak arm. You just throw the ball away and catch his.
Yeah.
Or if he's got a rocket, you're holding that ball, and you use that to block.
But I've seen people like I was on the other side of one versus five, and it got to where I was ducking him, and I ended up laying down at one point. Just against like where the ground meets the wall, just trying to survive. And then that's the dumbest. I did that once. And you just can't even communicate. You're just getting peppered by, it was the stupidest move of all time. You're better off just sticking an arm out and getting hit. I was trying to survive that, but they had hogged all the balls on their side and they had scooted them all that way. And then they were just basically throwing rockets at me.
Yeah,
and if it missed me, it would hit the wall and bounce right back to it. I never had a chance to get my hands.
Well,
on
you
the
don't
ball.
Know how to do it. That's why. I mean, you don't go up against the wall ever.
What you did is so unheard of.
I know.
Beating one, you must have five
seen, because everybody
players.
From the lunchroom was there and they were going crazy. It was awesome.
How about the kids who just couldn't wait to get out? I didn't feel bad for them at the time. You don't feel bad for anybody at the time.
Well, one kid that was still left, I. Get up, got
nut toward, shot,
and just no, bam, off his head. I mean, hard, hard. And yeah, back then, but there was no rules that you couldn't. Like,
those were those inflated,
wing it off a guy's head real hard,
inflated rubber balls. That
they were good.
You could feel them.
No, you could hurt them. You could hurt them.
But
back then, you'd be like, oh, that was sweet. Now it's like you're out of the
ball,
game.
It now for the crybabies. Now it's like this is the ultimate epitome of toxic masculinity. As the alphas will just pepper the beta people with ball and it never stops and then they can't get into the no it's just it's like you know it's kind of like war
oh.
Sometimes there's strategy, sometimes you have to know who is going to fight and who's going to
be a biznatch,
going to take off and run. And I was always pretty good at dodgeball, but then ultimately. You know, ultimately, it's the guys with the rocket launchers. First of all, whoever had the best team was going to probably win. You could have some Billy Badasses on your team, But if all the other kids are going to get out, as soon as it turns into a numbers game, you're in trouble. Because our strategy always involved, as soon as you get a ball, just put it back there, and we're going to have four or five people throwing it, and the rest of you just sit back there. You're just part of the numbers. Until we call on you to start throwing. It was well organized. And PE coaches, it was a great chance for them to do nothing.
Ours wasn't. It was just, okay, are you alive or aren't you? That's all. If you get a hit, get out. Beat it. Todd wants to talk. He agrees with Lance about dodgeball. What do you say, Todd?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing this morning?
Good.
Cool, man. I am 35. I'll be 36 this year. Lived in Texas all of my life. A couple of stints here and there out of state working, but that's it. It is called a pump. We've always called it a pump. I remember when pegs first became a thing and that made it easier. You could set your feet on the front peg while you're getting the pump. Sorry, mm-hmm. John. It is called a pump. Yeah. And throw some, make some. I'm out of here.
He knows. No, that's not.
I've won this one a long time ago.
First of all, y'all keep pumping each other. That's fine. No one, you know what? You keep doing that here.
Are you in a crew? We ain't doing that. Are you in a crew where a man bought another man jeans? Yes or no?
No.
Yes, you are. You're no longer allowed to comment. No. If Dell were in there, he would call you a liar and would be 2-on-1.
No, it's not. Yes. No. Here's the problem. We don't give each other pumps. We just give each other a ride. That's what we do. 856 ESPN 97.5. Do you need a ride? Yeah, jump on. Jump on the handlebars. Okay. That's good.
All right, I'll pump you over there. That's how it works.
Don't say that anymore. No, don't say that anymore. Still ahead, we're going to get somebody on from NFL.com to talk about rookies. We'll get that going on.
9:30.
But still ahead, we haven't touched on Jack Morris. We got a lot of things that we haven't touched on yet. Lance Lynn got a little irate last night.
Is this the first time he's been checked for sticky stuff?
I can't, apparently. And then Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. Whatever. We'll talk about all that on the other side here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.